This program was made in partnership with the Adams County Chapter of the Pennsylvania Sports Hall of Fame. The Adams County Sports Hall of Fame exists to honor those who participate in athletics in our local community and to celebrate those values that sports can serve to develop in those who participate. To become a chapter member and honor future deserving sports notables, contact President Joe Yeck via email jyeck64@gmail.com or by telephone 717-357-2147. You may also contact Ed Riggs by email edriggs78@gmail.com or telephone 717-357-0133. Hello again, sports fans. Welcome to a special edition of Sports Chat. I'm Jeff Cook. Seated to my immediate right, Joe Yeck, president of the Adams County Chapter of the Pennsylvania Sports Hall of Fame. To my immediate left, community media founder and CEO, Raymond Gauker. And to my far right, Andrea Wickerham, a member of the class of 2025, the most recent group of inductees into the hall. So welcome, Andrea. The focus of tonight's discussion is what it means to be an athlete, what athletics contribute to the community, and what sort of values we can take out of this to our daily lives. Ray will expound more on that as we progress, but Andrea, congratulations on your recent induction. I met you that night.
Yep, thanks, Jeff.
We talked on camera a little bit, so you were a pre-Title IX. We talked about doing your own uniforms. Can you expound on that a little bit? And this was at Gettysburg High School or also at Adersinus? You had to do your own uniforms there.
Both, actually, a little bit of both. Thanks for that. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. So I graduated from Gettysburg High School in 76. So it was, by the law's standard, Title IX had passed.
That's right. It was like 72?
But the implementing regulations weren't finished yet. So in that sense, pre-Title IX for sure. So I played numerous sports in high school. I was on the first Gettysburg High School girls basketball team in 1977-78. And I think about that is, I just think it's astounding that the first girls team was in 1977.
Andrea, can I ask you something there?
Sure.
In those days, was it 6-on-6? They played 3-on-3 half court and you only played defense or you played offense?
Rovers.
So when I was in junior high school, what they call middle school today, I played rec basketball. So I was, you know, grades 7, 8, 9. It was six player with two rovers. And I most certainly was a rover because I'm going the full court. Once we got to high school, the game had changed. And so we played traditional five player basketball. I did my grad work at the University of Iowa. So yes, I went to Ursinus, played a couple of sports at Ursinus.
Six girl basketball is still big in Iowa for a long time.
Very big. So I went to grad school in 1981, and it had just started. It was a huge Iowa High School Athletic Association, a huge push. And from the community, some communities, to switch over to five player because they felt that their girls weren't getting scholarship opportunities to play five player in college. So it took them a while, but while I was in grad school, they switched over to full five player. And then I got involved after that, college coaching, college athletic administration, went to law school, worked for a sports drug testing company, and lots in between, so.
Right, Ray,
that's quite an arc of a life experience there. What was it like when you were in high school? You're in the 70s. You were listening to Bruce Springsteen.
Absolutely.
I watched your video. and but you had a lot of good friends. You had a lot of close friends.
Yeah, very much so. And there was an article. So right before, I just had been traveling internationally, but right before then, there were a group of us baseball and field hockey players who celebrated the 50th year reunion of our respective high school conference championships. So baseball, I think, was in South Mountain Athletic Conference. Field hockey was the same. And so we did a 50th year reunion of those two teams. Football, actually, they're in the fall, they also won their conference championship. So I thought about that and thought, that's just fantastic that three teams in the same year, our graduating class, won their conference championship.
Was that pre-Blue Mountain League?
Yes, it was. Because all of us, both baseball and field hockey players, we kind of thought, wasn't it called the Blue Mountain League?
I was coaching in baseball in the 70s, and it was called the South Mountain.
Yeah. And I didn't remember it, but to go to your question, Ray, we just had, and many live here today, but not all. We had about 50 from both teams total come back for this reunion. And we had the same thought. We all were good friends in high school. We all played sports, some multiple sports. We kind of joked that many of us dated many people on the football team or the basketball team or the baseball team, and to reconnect with them over the years. Also, we honored Edie Reinhart, who was our field hockey coach. We were on the second undefeated team. And Terry Fox was there. He was the head coach. I'm sure you all know Terry, for the baseball team. But we also honored, and Terry did a phenomenal job, Tony Bushy, who was the longtime assistant baseball coach under Terry. And Tony had passed away, I think, maybe 15 or so years ago. Not exactly sure the date.
I think it was 2020.
Oh, wow. So not.
Something on that recently about, you know.
And many of us knew Tony. We had him for math class, but it was just a fun, friend-filled. We did it at the American Legion, and we just had so much fun reconnecting our high school friends and our sporting experience, but also how, at least from my vantage point, Mrs. Reinhart, Edie, was so instrumental to teaching us field hockey, not only in physical education class. We got together and asked some of my teammates, where did we learn to play field hockey? And my answer was different, and I talked about this in my presentation at the award ceremony for the Hall of Fame. I was lucky enough to be able to practice with the college team because my mother was a faculty member, and I would just race home from school and go play field hockey and basketball with some college kids, which today's unheard of. But we all agreed that we learned the sport of field hockey in physical education class. And then the sophomores, the juniors, the seniors taught the ninth graders and the 10th graders how to play the game. And Mrs. Reinhart, there were 45 field hockey players, my graduating class, on the team. Coach of one. She never had an assistant coach, and that goes to Title IX topics. But for years, she was a teacher. She coached multiple sports. She was raising four kids at the time. But we all agreed that we learned how to play the game, what a wonderful teacher she was, what a wonderful coach she was. And she taught us really a lot about things that we, as 16, 17, or 18-year-olds, just didn't recognize at the time.
You said 45 on the team?
Yeah.
Did she have a no-cut policy?
It's a great question. Probably. I'm guessing so. Yeah.
I don't know a lot about hockey. How many play at a time?
11 a side.
So it's pretty hard to get everybody in.
Yeah. Yeah. We had two teams. Okay. There was. So a pretty good feeder system.
In those days, too, you waited your turn. You know, today, if you don't start or play much, you know, the kids will hang it up.
Yeah.
And back then, it was just, you know, normal to wait your turn and just be part of a team and cheer everybody else on.
Yeah,
and that's important. Being part of that team meant a lot.
Yep.
It meant a lot.
Absolutely. Yeah, there were a couple of women who came back for the reunion. So it was my senior class that was the fall of 75. We graduated in 76. A number of the players were on the junior varsity. And they're like, so why did you invite us? And it's like, because you practiced every day with us. You ran sprints with us. You know, you just...
You were on the team.
You were on the team. You didn't always travel, but because we only had 11 and maybe four or five subs, but...
Did you take a bus?
Yeah. Yeah. School bus. Yeah. Judy Warner.
Sarge?
I don't know if you know...
Her nickname. I've heard that before. Talk about... So you mentioned hockey, basketball. Were there other sports you played in high school?
Our
three seasons, right?
I know.
What did you do in the fall? Or was that when hockey?
Field hockey was in the fall. Basketball was in the winter. I did a little bit of, track and field. And I was, like, they had the softball throw in 1976. And
that was in the president's fitness test, too.
Oh,
the
really?
Softball throw, yeah. I still remember it was my nemesis.
I was a high jumper, go figure. It was just a scary thought, probably. But it was the only sport in the spring that we didn't have soccer yet. And they kind of flip-flop sometimes, fall or spring. Didn't have lacrosse, didn't have tennis, didn't have softball. I think the year after I graduated, they started softball.
Talk a little bit about Ursinus.
Yeah, so...
Your sporting experience
yeah,
then.
Yeah, so Ursinus College, in today's terms, is a Division III. At the time, it was AIAW, so we played... I competed against Maryland and Penn State and Delaware in many sports, but also, you know, St. Joe's and Cabrini and Elizabethtown, and the list goes on. So I played field hockey, basketball and tennis. I played field hockey. It was a really good field hockey team. I was a JV player, barely. So I watched some very good field hockey players play the game.
They had a great program for a
very
long time,
good program.
Right?
Yeah.
National contenders type.
Very much so. And even during my day, again, it was combined AIAW. So.
Well, Philadelphia at that time, I think, was pretty good in. And that type of sport down in that area.
Yep, very much so.
You think Immaculata College in the 70s
played,
with basketball.
Yep, we did.
Won, you know, the first couple of the national championships.
We competed against Immaculata. Kathy Rush was the head coach. And then I played basketball, and we were probably not quite as good as field hockey, but I loved basketball. It was my favorite sport.
It's a great game, right, Jim?
And I played tennis 3 years. Yeah.
The Bears.
The Bears, Ursinus, Ursa Major, Ursa Minor. And it was a plug for my parents to some degree. My parents both went to Ursinus, okay, as did my sister. I have a brother also. He did not. But they all were, both my parents played sports, and I think that was, it's what got me there. I looked at other schools, but it really was, I knew Ursinus, I knew the coaches, or knew of the coaches, and I knew that I could play, at least I thought I could, but it really was a good experience for me.
Let me ask you something here. I had an aunt and uncle who lived in the Norristown meeting area.
Sure, yeah.
Collegeville, when we used to go down and visit them, had a great Collegeville Inn.
Oh, yeah.
And a Sunday... In those days, it was called Smorgasburg.
Yeah,
they had great the college.
Used to frequent it.
I thought so. Maybe when your parents came, you
absolutely
went there.
Yeah.
My grandmother lived on Glenwood Avenue. My parents went to Collegeville Trap High School, so
I'm very familiar
with the area. Yeah.
It was. I look at it now. I mean, there was kind of one restaurant besides the Collegeville Inn that we would go, but there was nothing there except Ursinus College, and it has clearly changed. There's more to do. Very similar to Gettysburg in some ways.
Student enrollment 2000?
It's about the same. Yeah, I don't know what it is now. Maybe a little more. Yes. Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
So you mentioned when you were in high school that the girls were champions, and the the football team.
Yes.
And
baseball.
And baseball. So what was going on that these teams were very successful?
It's a great question. I don't truly know the answer. Many girls and boys at the time played multiple sports, so you had the same people going through. I would attribute it to the coaches.
Based on your description, great coaching.
Yeah, and it's, you know, I don't know enough about there was Little League for boys. There was not an equivalent for girls. There was not youth field hockey. So again, I kind of go back to coaching and then the upperclassmen teaching the underclassmen a little bit about the game. There were, at least on field hockey, I don't know about baseball, there were a handful of us who would go to different summer camps or a field hockey clinic, so to speak. There was one at the University of Delaware. I remember some of my teammates talked about. I never went to that one, but there were day camps. One, I remember it vividly, in Hanover, and I don't know if it was at Delone. I can't picture the location of it, but there were a number of other people like Edie Reinhart who did clinics for at least my sport for field hockey in the lead up to the season. Esther Sanders at Biglerville. There were Diane Livelsberger in Hanover, and I think she was at Delone. Don't quote me on that, but
I believe you're right.
They Sue Kinsey at Bermudian Springs. They would, and I'm quite sure they weren't paid.
Grace Kenny at Gettysburg College.
Absolutely.
She's a Hall of Famer, right, Joe?
Yeah.
That's where I was, privileged, and I talked about privilege in my presentation, is I was lucky enough to have access.
What about Alice Bowers? Did you get to meet her?
I knew who she was, but she came after me when I was already in high school and playing sports. But Grace Kenny, the fact that she allowed me to walk onto the field, and it wasn't like it was 30 seconds. I did the entire practice from A to Z, and I learned the game from her and the college kids around her. So, and to this day, I still know many of those players. Ann Meckley was one.
I think also the parents you have to give a lot of credit to.
Oh, absolutely.
The key thing about back then is that a family was involved in their total education, whether it's, working hard in school and also working hard on the athletic fields. And the kids, that was an expectation. And that expectation was the coaches were in charge and the parents were in the background, and whatever the coach said, that's the way it should be done.
Yeah.
And they respected that. They respected that they are being led by the right people.
Yeah, and I know that my mother, who was a college athlete herself and taught at Gettysburg College a little bit later in her career, but was a high school and college official, but she knew Edie Reinhart. They were in school together at the same time at Ursinus, which I didn't really put together until this high school reunion that I was telling you about. And I talked to Edie's two daughters who were there. But she respected Mrs. Reinhart enough, a lot. She would come to my games when she could. She's not yelling at the coach or the officials. It's just, let the game happen. Let the coach do what she's supposed to do, and the kids will adjust accordingly. So,
your point, Joe, about the parents being supportive of the coach in those days. I coach myself. Probably the last thing you want to do is have a parent discuss playing time.
Oh, yeah.
Right? I mean, so that didn't happen back in those days? Word was gospel, and you just went from there. But now you have the helicopter parent syndrome, and they want to get involved in every aspect of the team.
Yeah.
It's driven many coaches out of the
absolutely.
You don't see the lifer like you used to. You know, coaches staying in for 20, 30 years to coach.
Yeah, I never felt that. I never felt pressured from my parents to participate or not participate. It was just something that I enjoyed, and I want to try out for the field hockey team or the basketball team.
So you went out for track because you liked being part of a team and you wanted to stay in shape?
Yep, absolutely. And it wasn't, I mean, it was sort of just wasn't part of the vernacular. If mom and dad would, you know, talk to Mrs. Reinhardt or my basketball coach about Andrea's playing time or lack of playing time. It, even when I coached, and it was, again, a different time, helicopter parents weren't there yet, but there were some, you know, boisterous parents in the background, but never, and I was an assistant coach, so never, was never approached about anybody's playing time or lack of playing time. I find it astonishing and still do, so.
I remember, in high school, you would get a playbook, and you know you have your hard skills that the coaches teach you, but there was also these soft skills, you know, some expectations to be on a team and what it meant to be on the team.
Accountability.
Accountability was, and the accountability was such that when you grew, everything was about growing, trying to become better. You're accountable to your teammates. But you also become accountable to yourself in that the motivation doesn't come from outside. The motivation comes from inside. And I think...
And expectations. You know, the responsibility of knowing that playbook inside and out. That you're letting your someone down next to you. If you're a football player, you're a lineman, you know, if you're not, you don't know your that play, you know, everything's going to, you know, backfire.
And you didn't want to be the one.
Yeah.
That made the mistake, especially if it was not from lack of trying, if it was something that could have been prevented, you know, you didn't want to be the one. Respect was extremely important, and you mentioned that, that word before.
You don't want to just be a better player, you want to be a better teammate also.
Well, and those relationships were very valuable. I mean, when you were, I remember in grade school, you would look up to some of the seniors, and they were more or less like a role model to you. You know, we'd play.
You're soccer. Idolized.
Yeah.
The Beast.
Yeah, but you know, we'd go and probably not watch much of the football game because we'd have sock footballs. You know, you take stock socks and you. You know, just put them together in time, and we'd be playing in the beyond the end zone. But when we were playing, we were using the names of the senior football players.
That's interesting.
Like that. But we did. We looked up to those individuals, and I think they knew it too. And I think that was talked about.
Being a role model was very important, and then you sort of pass that down, you know, to the younger people and. It was their, you know, turn when it was when they became upperclassmen.
You know, it's interesting. I don't. I mean, I'm almost 70, and I don't have a memory of explicit words from high school or even my college coaches about being a positive role model. It's something that we did, and maybe it came from the upperclassmen. In my group, but I don't remember Mrs. Reinhardt again, and maybe she did and I'd have forgotten it, but it was expected or assumed that you would do the best you could and you would help others learn the game and you would compete. I remember when I was in 10th grade, and that's what the first that you could play field hockey, there was, and I remember a discussion with Mrs. Reinhardt actually. I was competing for a position and the person who I was competing with was a senior. And there was no way Mrs. Reinhardt was going to displace that senior early in the season.
You had to wait your turn, right?
That's I waited my turn, but it was short-lived. And so Mrs. Reinhardt, I remember a conversation. She said, I'm going to do this. I'm going to start Andrea. And she... I mean, it's just so simple in today's coaching. She moved the other player to another position because she was really good, and it wasn't just going to be in and out. And so it was a big deal at that point in time.
You know, what you also got, I think, was that if you had siblings.
Oh, yeah.
And the oldest sibling a lot of times had to, you know, lead the way.
Yep.
I mean, like, for example, my own daughter, you know, with her, you know, younger, you know, brother and sister, we had high expectations. And basically, you know, she knew that. Matter of fact, I used to joke, when they were in high school, my two oldest daughters, when they would be leaving, they would go to Gettysburg High School. I was going to Biglerville. And as they were walking out the door, I would say, remember, you're carrying the Yek name. And
interesting.
And being a teacher and a coach, you know, I had expectations for them. And I think they eventually had expectations themselves and passed it on to their, you know, younger brother. So, you know, in terms of role models, it became something that occurred. So as they were leaving the house, as they become juniors and seniors, and I would say it all the time. They said, "Yes, Dad, don't even say it. Yes, we're carrying the Yek name."
But that's important. I think that's very important. Is, you know, the fact that you are part of something greater than yourself. The fact that, okay, you're doing this, but when you're doing it as part of a family. You're doing it as part of the Gettysburg community, or for you, it was which community that you grew up in. Well, you coached in Biglerville, but when you were a player, you were
up near, you're talking my hometown area?
Yeah.
Shenandoah, Pennsylvania, up in the coal regions. Yeah. And you talk about the coal regions in terms of the toughness that they expected, mm-hmm. you know, because of the hardworking people and the mines and everything else. Mm-hmm. And even that generation that you're talking about in the 70s, the parents, grandparents were coming out of, you know, World War II. They talk about the greatest generations ever. They basically built America, you know, during the 50s when the war was over. And again, expectations and to, you know, what hard work, what can happen with good hard work.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead. No.
You're part of the team even when you're away from the field of competition.
Yep.
And that's maybe a value that we're losing currently.
I think.
At the pro level, collegiately.
Well, in society, possibly.
Yeah.
I mean, it's if you are, if you're giving yourself up so that others can do better, what a concept.
Yeah. Sportsmanship is very important.
Yeah.
Something that we sometimes forget about.
Agreed.
Today.
Yeah, I had to ask my sister this, who's 4 years older than I am, and she was on the first Gettysburg High School undefeated field hockey team. She taught at Littlestown High School for a number of years, but when she was in high school, our mother was an official. And I don't remember Mom ever officiating any of my games, but she clearly, my sister Barb said that, oh yeah, she would officiate some of the games. I said, well, how was the dinner conversation after, you know, a win or a loss? But Esther Sanders at Biglerville would hire my mother because she thought she was a good official. So when Gettysburg played Biglerville, there was my mother being the official for my sister.
It's like, probably harder on your sister than
on any. In field hockey, it's interesting because you do look at the person or the body, but rule-wise, you look at a lot of the feet, so they all kind of look alike, so it doesn't, you know, somebody's feet is either in dark socks or white socks, so it was, I think, a non-issue for my mother, but it goes back to sportsmanship. You just didn't question an official's call. I mean, you might get an eye roll every once in a while, but it just didn't exist, and if it did, or in college, you were on the bench. I mean, at least my experience is, if you questioned a basketball official or a field hockey official's call, the coach would just sort of, you know, sit for a few moments and reflect on that.
Your sister didn't talk to your mother, complain to your mother about her officiating?
Not that I remember.
Yeah.
But on the back of her shoes, it had "Hi, Mom."
Right.
So values, I mean, that's something that I think the Sports Hall of Fame, you know, the effort is there to recognize those people who have built the character to excel in sports. And then a lot of those people become leaders in the community, as you have, Andrea.
Yeah, I like your list up there at the top of the page. Citizenship, character, accountability, discipline, service, belonging, resilience.
Integrity is a perfect word, too.
Yeah, agreed.
And I think that's part of the effort that the Hall is trying to do is help promote those concepts in local sports. You know, so you honor the people who were and trying to influence those people who will be. And, you know, and again, you look at the people who are part of the Hall of Fame, they're leaders. And the things that they have done outside of sports yet, I mean, Bob Kenworthy, he was a leader in the community. He was involved in...
He knew every stat, too.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So,
over 170 inductees since 2001 when the Adams County Sports Hall of Fame started.
And you have an event coming up here shortly.
A big one. This will be our 25th anniversary of the Adams County, Pennsylvania Sports Hall of Fame. Started back in 2001 by guys like Bob Kenworthy. He also was inducted in those first classes, along with our first person we had for a documentary back in November, Lefty Beiser, the head trainer at Gettysburg College. But the 25th anniversary is something special. Normally, we hold our induction banquet, which is always in November, at the Gettysburg Rec Park, where we graciously have had, over probably the last 10 years or so, took us in, and we have all our bios and pictures and plaques around the Charles Stirner building. And we figured for this year, being the 25th, we wanted to have a little bigger shindig. And we're holding it this year at Gettysburg College at the atrium area of the college. And we're going to, God willing, invite as many inductees back who are able to come. And we hope we're getting a good turnout for this event in November, November 7th.
And if people want to know more about that, there'll be information.
There'll be information coming out. Matter of fact, shortly there'll be something in, probably here on, you know, community media in terms of people you could nominate, that you could also become a member of the Hall or the organization. And it'll be certainly in the Gettysburg Times and things like that, various media that will tell people how they could, you know,
it's gonna
join.
It's going to be on the weekend this year?
Yes, it'll be Saturday, November 7th. Started moving it to Saturday. We used to hold it in the midweek, I don't know why, Wednesday or Thursday.
Yeah.
And we held it for the first time in Andrea's class.
Good turnout.
On Saturday, and we had a great turnout. I think it gives people a chance to unwind a little bit for a weekend instead of rushing back or... Yep. Maybe not even getting some people for the family to come, et cetera.
Gives the media a little more time to make deadline. I've covered the induction event, and I guess you could tape everybody's remarks, but then you'd have to listen to them all again. So I take copious notes, and then I'm just typing frantically. So Saturday helps the third estate or the fourth estate as well.
And it's a great time. I mean, you talk about sports and the values that come from sports. I think one of them, you know, you look at being a teammate, but there's a fraternity. Like Andrew, you were saying, your groups got back together after 50 years, and it was probably as if you didn't skip a beat.
Right, little time had passed. It was fun. And many of them, not all, but many I've stayed connected with, but largely not. I mean, I have a handful of closer friends in the area or close by who I stay in touch with. But to see the players who were in 10th grade or 11th grade, I didn't didn't know them well. So to be able to see where they are and what they're doing today, both with baseball and with my field hockey teammates. I also get together, I have, there's probably six or eight of us from college who many of them were much better athletes, U.S. lacrosse players and U.S. field hockey players. My college roommate, who was at the induction ceremony, is from Littlestown. And she was a very, very good athlete. We ended up being roommates for a couple of years at Ursinus. Her parents are still in Littlestown. But there's six or eight of us who we stay and we get together. We try to get together once a year, but not always possible. But and we played a variety of sports, some better than others. Some own their own business. Some are retired teachers. But we laugh as hard each and every year telling stories or revisiting games that we played or coaches that we know. And that just is it is teamwork. It's a sorority of women who, because of our sporting connection, that's how I got to know them. And it's so much fun. And we just are lucky to be able to have that.
It's a bond.
Most certainly.
You went through those shared experiences.
Absolutely.
And sacrificed. I mean, to play a sport isn't like showing up and...
Right.
Because you want to be the best you can. So there's a lot of working out. There's a lot of practice. There's a lot of of whatever it takes to get there. And as you said, there was a lot of opportunities back then, as there is now. I mean, I don't know if there's... People do three sports anymore.
They do.
Yeah. Like
Nate Hubbard, he's a good three sport athlete. I'm sure we have him at every high school. Braden Billman.
Yeah. I've been reading about
him. Basketball track. Yeah. I mean, but Joe knows this too. Some coaches want the player to focus only on one sport. Travel soccer, for example. Sure. They don't want them playing other sports.
AAU, I think, has taken over a lot, from the high school coach to everybody. At one time, looked at the high school coach, but like you said, the traveling teams and everything else, and it's sort of frustrating in some ways that that they're
play for an AAU team than for their own high school,
because everybody thinks they're going to go on and play in the college level.
Right.
And yeah. Oh gosh, yeah. I got a question for Andrea.
Okay.
Talk about mentors and mentorship. Maybe starting at high school and also college, but maybe even so when you were starting your career.
Absolutely.
Especially being a female back in that period of time, I'm sure you had a lot of hurdles to jump in. It wasn't easy.
Right.
Maybe you could, expound a little bit on
that. Yeah, thank you for that. Yeah, I talked about Mrs. Reinhart and Grace Kenny, we talked about at the college. And, intellectually, I didn't know it then about what they were teaching us. I'm not sure any 16 or 18-year-old, at least I didn't, realized the benefit of what they were teaching me. In the one that comes to mind is Christine Grant, who was the women's athletic director at the University of Iowa when I was in grad school, Dr. Christine Grant. She was, and I did know it at the time, I was lucky to find the University of Iowa. It was just, I just did a little bit of research and they said yes to me. I got a graduate assistantship. I had never been there before until I went for the first week of field hockey practice in August. So I'm like, where am I going? Oh, you're going
to corn.
You're going to Iowa City, Iowa. Okay, great. But Dr. Grant, at the time, there were separate men's and women's athletic departments. Bump Elliott, I don't know if that name's familiar, but he was the men's athletic director at the time. And Christine was very active in AIAW and became very instrumental in the growth of women's sports under the NCAA's heading once the NCAA took over AIAW. But I had her for a variety of classes, athletic administration, philosophy of sport. But I also was a graduate assistant with her. I was a graduate assistant with the field hockey program. And then I also had a second assistantship working for Dr. Grant. And she has since passed, but she, for her entire career, phenomenal mentor, phenomenal teacher, Very active nationally, very active in the growth of Title IX and input into college sport. When I, one of my jobs post graduate school, I became the director of athletics at Luther College, which is very, it's in Decorah, Iowa, so back to Iowa. And I got her to drive 2.5 hours north and come speak to sort of the local Rotary Club and many people in the department. And she gladly did it. It was just something that she did. And written a couple of books, but she had an influence in sport, in the growth of sport at Iowa, in the growth of sport nationally. But she remembered many of her graduate students who came through the program. And I graduated in 83, just as the NCAA was taking over women's sports. And in the long run, I think was a good thing. She might disagree. But a phenomenal mentor for so many women in literally the cornfields of Iowa. She was Canadian. No, actually, take that back. She was Scottish. She came from Scotland, got her PhD in Canada, and was hired by the University of Iowa. She was the athletic director who hired Vivian Stringer to come to the University of Iowa from Cheney, mm-hmm. And was just so
did
much.
She went to Rutgers?
She did, afterwards, yeah.
Vivian Stringer, just a couple years ago, was nominated for the state-level Hall of Fame, Pennsylvania State, and she was inducted, I think it was 2 or 3 years ago, out in Pittsburgh.
Fabulous.
Which I attended, and quite impressive in terms of her background, but also her message to everybody that night.
She's, I remember it being a controversy at the time, because going back to Christine, Dr. Grant, she had a sort of a moral philosophy or an ethical belief that all coaches under her in the women's department were paid the same. They all taught, for one, but they also coached. And so whether you were the basketball coach or the tennis coach or the field hockey coach, you got paid the same. Well, that's not the case when Vivian Stringer was hired. And it was, not that it was outrageous at the time, but there were many people who kind of thought, I'm not sure I agree with that. But Christine saw what was happening with women's sports, knew that Vivian could grow the women's basketball at the University of Iowa. They were building a brand new arena, and she felt that Vivian could help fill that arena, and she was absolutely right.
We talked before we went on camera. You mentioned a need for more women's sports, more opportunities in sports for women. One thing I've just recently learned is a lot of colleges, as a recruiting idea, are touting women's sports. They're adding women's sports. Gettysburg College is adding women's wrestling next year, and the following year, flag football and something called gymnastics and tumbling, or is it tumbling and gymnastics?
Yeah.
I don't know. Is that a cross between
rhythm
cheerleading
gymnastics.
And gymnastics? I don't know. But the idea, it's not that they necessarily believe in women's sports. I think they do.
Sure.
But they also realize that it's a way to recruit students. And now the student population at college age is declining.
Yep.
They have expenses. So it's interesting that there are more opportunities developing for women.
Yeah, there certainly can be, and I would argue should be, if the entity can afford to do it. And I think there's a difference or a potential difference between Division III, Gettysburg or Ursinus, who are adding sports because they're, and this is broad generalization, I think, they're not on scholarship. So they may have athletic scholarship. They may have some academic aid, but many of them are paying some form of their tuition or all of their tuition. And so that helps admission.
Based on need.
Well, yes and no.
D3, I mean, you can't just get an athletic scholarship.
No, you can't. You have to have need. But I'm assuming there are some students who don't qualify for need, and so they are paying the full cost of Gettysburg. Or Ursinus, or Washington and Jefferson, you name it. And that helps admissions. And so one way of doing that is through sport. which is wonderful. The other part of it, I'm going to guess, I don't know Gettysburg College's Title IX numbers, but like most colleges or university, they are probably somewhat out of compliance with Title IX based on numbers anyway. And so rather than, maybe it's 10 years ago now, maybe more, many schools were cutting sports because they cutting men's sports.
You're seeing that at the D1 level.
Absolutely.
Like tennis, golf,
yep.
These yep. So-called lesser sports because they're not income generating.
Right. Right.
That's not right.
Yeah, which is different from Division III, who are, it's broad-based, it's participation, it's driven by admission. Division I is driven by, athletic scholarships in sport. So you're going to have to be able to pay for all of those kids, and that's where it's a long conversation, I'm sure. Today's sports with NLI and the amount of money that is being spent on mostly men's sports, not all. I think the fallout, as you said, Jeff, is going to be in the Olympic sports and maybe the wrestlings and the tennis and the swimmings because they just don't have the resources anymore because they're putting it into NLI, at least at the bigger institutions at Division I. So long philosophical conversation.
The importance for our youth is they have a chance to experience something, an opportunity, even if it isn't sports. It could be theater, it could be music. But the individual has to be able to have the opportunity to learn their talents.
Yep.
To have the opportunity to have mentors that build confidence. Leadership, true leadership, where it's not someone is in control, but a unified group of people working towards a goal. And that's what I think builds that bond. I mean, just think about it. Being a junior or a freshman in high school, and you don't have the confidence or some of the life skills. I mean, not everybody has great parents.
Right.
Well, I think the key about being a mentor is that that young person is that that mentor has to basically help them that they can't fear to fail. Until you find what you would truly enjoy. Maybe you're going to be jumping around from either sport to sport or you name it. But you don't stand a chance unless you take a chance. And that mentor, if they get that across to them, helps them, overcome a teenager, especially during a teenager, it's difficult enough. But having someone there in your corner to guide you.
Having an advocate.
Yes.
That's what it's like.
Yeah.
And I think is society different where less people are playing sports?
Definitely.
Yeah.
You see the football rosters, some kids would rather get a job, buy a car. You've probably seen that, Joe, over the years.
Yeah, I think it's there may be less opportunities. Numbers-wise, I'm not totally sure about that. When I look at the number of sports that are offered, today versus in my time, there are more teams than there ever were, whether it's soccer or tennis or softball or lacrosse. And so there's more opportunity for sport. What I don't know is whether that's translated into more people playing sports. I don't know enough about youth sports in the area, so I don't know if there's, I look at youth soccer and I see lots of soccer folks.
Even in the rain. And they were out there playing.
And that's a sport where they start as soon as they can run.
Yeah. Yep.
You
mentioned Gettysburg adding wrestling, college adding wrestling.
Coach Haynes is going to be the
I know.
Coach.
Couldn't be a better one.
I have always really enjoyed watching wrestling. Some of my female friends are like, why do you watch this? And I had a cousin who actually went to Gettysburg College and was a wrestler. So I watched him. I think that was probably, and high school, I had some high school friends. We had boys high school wrestling. And by the time my career, well, Iowa, like I watched Dan Gable and his Iowa Hawkeyes wrestle, kind of insane, but they were good. And then the end of my career, I was at Penn State. So I got to watch Cale Sanderson and his team.
What
and,
a record that guy
Oh my
has.
Gosh. Unbelievable. Talk about a young man mentor to youth and his team and Olympic level, even beyond. But I kind of had always said, not fervently, but like, why aren't women, why aren't girls wrestling? It's little people can do it, you know, 109 or 118 or whatever it is. Heavyweight, you're on your own, but you're part of a team. It's strength, it's flexibility, it's endurance. I think girls should be playing this sport. So I've gotten into a number of arguments with friends who are like, it's, you know, some of their methodology probably needs to improve. But I'm actually glad to see that there are high school and colleges now adding women's wrestling.
What other sport can you be the hero just by not getting pinned? Right. It's kind of an interesting aspect. One concept we really haven't mentioned, it's kind of a pet peeve for me. Work ethic. I mean, if there's a single quality that can carry you through life, it's work ethic. How do you develop that? How do sports help you develop? How has sports helped you develop work ethic?
Yeah, I was thinking about this back in the beginning of the conversation. And again, didn't know it at the time, but it just, I kind of had to do it to survive, I think. Or to do well. And I was not a great athlete. I played a lot of sports. I did okay in them. And I had a long career in athletics in different ways. But every season that I played a sport, I tended to do better academically. So, and that was clear in college. And again, not a great student, but I knew I had to be organized and I had to sort of plan out my day or my week based on practice and travel schedule and long weekends on a bus. And that played out in graduate school when I was coaching and also going to school. So I think the sort of the organizational skill is what helped me the most, sort of planning. And that played out in my career. I ended up working in rules compliance and NCAA rules education and on-campus compliance of student athletes and their coaches. And I just found that I was, just sort of always on task, always on time. Now, to the detriment of that, I had to learn flexibility and patience and change when my schedule didn't play out like it that I thought it would. So I had to really work at being flexible and on occasion less organized in order to get my day done. But it was, I think it was sport and always playing sports that kind of kept me on track.
Well, one word, I'm sorry, go ahead, Joe.
When you think about work ethic, you know, and what she said, I was just thinking about my own situation where back in high school, I had 12 years of Catholic education and nothing but nuns and never had a lay teacher in all those years. And that was back, you know, in the late 50s, early 60s when I graduated high school. I can remember, and at that time, I never thought this nun would be like a mentor, but in ways, she knew that I could have a better work ethic because I walked into my sophomore year in my geometry class and I was already playing varsity basketball as a freshman back in those days. And I walk in and she says, well, here comes dynamic Joe Yek, class. He's very dynamic in the class, on the basketball court, but not so much in my classroom. You know, and could you imagine somebody, teacher, saying that today and what would happen with the parents thinking? You know, and the gosh, I would never run home and tell my parents. So the first marking period, I got a D in geometry, and I wanted to show that lady up. So the next Sparkin period, I got a B, and I finished with two A's.
There you go.
And she knew that I had the work ethic. And she saw it, because she always attended my games. We played a lot of Sunday games, and the nuns would come to the games and sit there and clap for your team. And she knew what I could do on the basketball court, but she wanted to see me do also perform in the classroom. And when I all said and done, when I got the two A's at the end, I said, boy, I showed that lady up. But she knew she had a purpose, and she knew I could take it because of she saw my work ethic. And and as you look back, I pray for her every night. Rest her soul that she's hopefully everything's good now. She's proud that I got the A's.
That's a great story.
We know you have work ethic.
It's the word that comes when people talk about you, Andrea, is grit. I've heard that associated with you also. And also you, Joe, I mean, you were challenged by this individual who knew, and I think this is something the mentors know that you're capable of doing more than what you know you are. Yeah. And they find ways to get that out of you. You know, it could be a little bit of embarrassment. It could be a little bit of, you're capable of doing more, and this is what I see from you.
And no doubt, my situation, I was really embarrassed because your friends are hearing her say that, mm-hmm. Well, he's not very dynamic in the classroom, and you're thinking, gosh, I gotta, mm-hmm. do something about that.
Yes.
And they'll use it against you.
Oh my gosh.
Come on, Joe.
Mr. Undynamic.
It's how dynamic you are at lunch. Right? But for me, I think the thing that I got from sports the most was the sacrifice it takes to get better, and it comes to grit. You have so much time between now and the season. What are you doing to get better? And we had doubles, and
you could lose 15 pounds in a day.
Sure.
And then they give you those salt pills.
And no water.
No
water. You can't have any water.
That's before Gatorade.
Exactly. Have all the salt you want. But, just being able. I remember at Shippensburg, at that time we had a lot of, we had a few. I don't want to say a lot. We had a few individuals on the team that were in Vietnam. So, they're coming out of Vietnam and they're coming into Shippensburg and playing sports.
Wow.
And Coach Epley, he had a philosophy that, there's one thing we're going to do is we're going to go in the season and everybody's going to be in shape and we're going to be able to outplay the opposing team in that one way combined with, having better strategy and stuff like that. So we ran a lot. We ran a lot. And then we ran a lot more, And this one vet was coming off the field, and he looks at me and he goes, I'm done. This is worse than boot camp, And I never went through that experience. But
he quit the team?
He quit the team.
Right there?
He quit the team. But that was common. That's what I saw as not quitting the team, but doing what you needed to do to be able to play the sport the best a team could. And that takes doing some things that aren't pleasant. It's sacrifice, it's goal setting, it's being able to know how to act when you don't reach the goal. Sometimes you don't reach the goal. What do? Do you give up or whatever? But for me, the thing that I got out of sports would probably be the grit that it takes to set goals and work towards them, to the point where it's hard for me to sit still sometimes,
Any other core values of the hall we need to address?
Well, we do have used a lot of time. There's a lot of things that we could talk about with the hall and how it's important for our community. But I think the thing that's important for our community is our youth. What are we doing as a community to make life easier for our youth as they grow to find out their purpose, their talents, their skills. And I think it comes down to the one word that we talked about is opportunity. You know, given our youth opportunity to do things, to find out if they have that skill, if they have that talent, if they have that interest, but also to have a relationship with people who advocate for them. Can you imagine not having someone that you can really feel cares about you?
Well, I think I really enjoyed Andrea's speech this past November for when she was inducted, and just going through her whole life situation. And again, Ray, with the community media, you guys have done such a great job over the years videoing our Hall of Fame induction. And there's an example of when it is on during that time of year, and you have it, you know, broadcast. I think parents really need to let their kids sit down and look at this, and let them hear those people have been inducted, and who they're thanking, and what they're and what they've been up to, and all the things that go into their whole beginning from when they were young, all the way up until the induction. And when kids could see that, and they're sitting down with their parents, and even the parents pointing out, look at this, look at that, you know, what these, you know, people have done through their life. I think I appreciate you being part of our team, and I want to thank you and your staff.
And I'm glad that you're welcome, and I'm glad you said the staff, because, you know, Jeff and Mark Worley and Sean and our volunteers and our partners and our guest hosts and just the opportunity that we have as a community here, a community organization, to provide, hey, this exists, this is possible. That experience is great. It's, I'd like to say thank you, Joe, but we're rewarded because we like doing that. You know, we like doing that.
It's great.
I think, Jeff, we all but ran out of, we can keep on going, can't we? I mean, we're just
we don't have a limit, but
I think
I was going to
last
move
word.
Toward wrapping it up.
Yep.
I don't need the last word, but any shout outs, anything you haven't covered, Andrea?
No, I've really, from the induction ceremony itself, I enjoyed getting to meet the other inductees. That was a pleasure. I've talked about my mentors and both here and friends and grad school and beyond, and my parents, long time, you know, both gone, but long time Gettysburg residents, who really were at the, without me knowing it, but they were the foundation that kind of launched my interest in sport, and didn't push it, but kept me interested. So shout out to Mom and Dad.
Very good. Joe?
Well, you know, being retired, you know, and being a teacher and coach for, you know, well over, you know, 40 years, I'm happy that I was able to find something in my volunteer time to do something like the Adams County Sports Hall of Fame. And it's just a wonderful time to be, you know, seeing the cream of the crop getting inducted. And to have those in our community and being of all of Adams County, we're in a great location to live, and we're very fortunate to, and I'm very fortunate to be part of that organization. And Jeff, you know, you do a great job with the write-up. People like Andrea and all the inductees, and certainly Ray and community media. It's just a pleasure to do something like this, to let the community see what can be done and is being done. And thank you.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, it's been fun.
You're a great leader, Joe. You're doing a great job with the hall. And I like the fact that the hall is has a vision of how the community can be involved. I mean, it's just like we said, playing sports. There's a bond that's experienced. And when you go to that evening, and you know, you were able to see all your friends come in and celebrate this moment for you, you know, it'd be nice if there could always be moments for us to get together to celebrate a bond, you know. Our youth, our, you know, even our adults, don't come home and close the door. Find out what your passion is and get involved in the community. It could be sports. I mean, there's ways you could help the hall. There's ways that you could help our sports program here with Jeff. I think sports was our first program that we did.
Yeah, I mean, Maryland TV, like, we don't do sports. And I bought one of those VHS box cameras. I just made the mistake of sitting in the most crowded section of bleachers and just started talking. Probably these people are looking over to me like, what's with this guy? But we showed everything on a 72-hour delay. So we've come so far. Now it's live. I always think of the people in assisted living or, you know, senior citizens who maybe can't go to the high school football game anymore. We bring the game to them, and we archive all these games. So you could be looking at the TV. There's a game from 35 years ago or whatever. Who's ever watching will call his friends. Hey, we're on TV. So it's really cool. But
and there's so much more we could do. I mean, there's so much more that we can do, even with our sports programming.
But you need help. You need help from the community. You need help from businesses. Mm-hmm.
Financial help.
Yes. Yeah. That's the bottom line. Even
the
like
stuff
in our,
it's not cheap.
In our situation, the next thing we would like to do, besides, you know, inducting people, is to maybe get some money together and have scholarships for the high school athletes. That could help them a little bit on their road. And but that's called money.
Yes. And we're working towards that. We're working towards some intentional, strategic ways of doing it. One is you could be a banner sponsor for the Adams County Sports Hall of Fame's website. You could also be a banner sponsor for community media. The thing about our partnership, and that's what I like, is that when you become a banner sponsor, typically you get a banner on a website. But with community media, you get it in back of all our shows that we produce. So you
with
get
creative
out,
input.
Well, yeah, creative input. You go out in our social media on Facebook and stuff like that. But I think it's very important for our youth to have opportunity. And, you know, and I'm happy that I get to be around people like yourselves.
It's great.
Thank you, Ray.
Thanks.
Thank you.
In spite of some of the criticisms we might have made, I think we all see the value in sports.
Absolutely.
And we wish sports will continue to be important. We wish all the athletes well. Special thanks to Mark Wehrle and Sean Garrett for helping out with this production. I guess I'll sign off.
Yeah, you're the best.
See you next time, sports fans. I'm Jeff Cook. Good night, everybody. Mahalo.